Okay. So today is class 10, and today we will be doing verses 30 and 31. Actually, we have finished the first half of Brahma Samhita, which is to do with creation and other aspects of creation. And the second part of Brahma Samhita is about the prayers of Lord Brahma. What he saw as his vision after he received the Kama Gayatri Mantra, how the Goloka Vrindavan was revealed to him, and how the Supreme Absolute Truth was revealed to him. So that is the part two of Brahma Samhita. And actually we had a long break in between. But in our previous class, we did verse number 29. So verse number 29 began with Chintamani Chakra Sadma Shukalpa Vriksha. That is with the very first verse that Brahma sings as the Govindam prayers. So we finished one verse. So today we are continuing on the same lines, and we'll be doing verses 30 and 31. I'll do the prayers and then we can start. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachanam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Mande Shri Gurum Dina Tarinam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prachavini Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Parchayatirishatadini Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Matali Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So as I mentioned, we have completed part one of Brahma Samhita, and we are continuing with part two, which is the Govindam prayers, the revelation of Lord Brahma. And verse 29 began with Chintamani Prakara Sadma Shukalpa Vriksha, which was our previous class. In that class, we discussed in detail about Krishna's cows, the different kinds of cows that Krishna has among the 900,000 cows of Nanda Maharaj. Then we saw how the entire abode of Goloka Vrindavan is Chintamani, the stones, the dust, everything is Chintamani. Then we saw about the trees. All the trees in Vrindavan are Kalpa Vrikshas, wish-fulfilling trees. And then we saw how Krishna is served by Lakshmi Sahasra Shata. Hundreds and thousands of gopis are serving Krishna with love. So this is what we saw in the previous verse, and we elaborated on each of these points in the previous verse. That was our class last time that we had the class. So today, we have two verses to cover, which is verse number 30 and 31. And these two verses are very special because they are mantra upasana verses. So if we remember our first half of the Brahma Samhita, we were talking about mantra upasana. How one meditates on a mantra and he enters the aprakata lila. He enters into the swarasati state. He enters into the aprakata lila. So the first stage is actually mantra upasana. To take a mantra and meditate on that mantra and sit in a particular place that associated with a pastime, meditate on that pastime while chanting on the mantra and concentrating on the mantra. So we have seen that in the first part. So one such mantra is also verses 30 and 31. We had mentioned this in our early classes. So other than the mantras that we have already spoken about, even these verses, they're actually not in a mantra format. They are more like like a prayer verse. So these 30 and 31 are considered one such mantra upasana verses. So we'll read the verse translation, and probably we'll do even the purport, because the purport is very short, and then we'll go ahead with the discussion. 5:30. Veenam Kvanantam Ravinda Dayala Daksham Barhavatam Samasitam Buddha Sundarangam Kandarpa Kotika Maniya Visesha Shobham Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Veenam, the flute. Kvanantam, playing. Aravinda Dala, like lotus petals. Ayata, blooming. Aksham, whose eyes. Barha, a peacock's feather. Avatamsam, whose ornament on the head. Asitambuda, tinged with a hue of blue clouds. Sundara, beautiful. Angam, whose figure. Kandarpa, of cupids. Koti, millions. Kamaniya, charming. Visesha, unique. Shobham, with loveliness. Govindam, Govinda. Adi Purusham, the original person. Tam, him, aham, I, bhajami, worship. Translation. I worship Govinda, the primeval lord, who is adept in playing on his flute with blooming eyes like lotus petals, with head bedecked with peacock's feather, and with the figure of beauty tinged with the hue of blue clouds, and his unique loveliness charming millions of cupids. Purport. The matchless beauty of Krishna, the supreme lord of Goloka, is being described. Krishna, the all-pervading cognition, has a spiritual form of his own. The form of Krishna is not a fanciful creation of imagination formed after visualizing the beautiful things of the world. What Brahma saw in his ecstatic trance of pure devotion is being described. Krishna is engaged in playing upon his flute. The flute by which his enchanting musical sound attracts the hearts of all living beings. Just as a lotus petal produces a pleasant sight, so the two beautiful eyes of Krishna, who causes the manifestation of our spiritual vision, display the unlimited splendor and beauty of his moon-like face. The loveliness that adores his head with peacock feather figures the corresponding feature of the spiritual beauty of Krishna. Just as a mass of blue clouds offers a specifically soothing, pleasant view, the complexion of Krishna is analogously tinged with a spiritual dark blue color. The beauty and loveliness of Krishna is far more enchanting than that of Cupid multiplied a millionfold. So I worship Govinda, the primeval lord, who is adept in playing on his flute with blooming eyes like lotus petals, head decked with peacock feather, with a figure of beauty tinged with the hue of blue clouds, and his unique loveliness charming millions of cupids. So it's a very meditative verse. One can meditate on Krishna thinking of this verse. So in this verse, many aspects of the form and beauty of Krishna are mentioned. So if you see, actually, the next verse also, verse number 31 also, talks about his flute. This verse talks about Venu. Venu is a kind of a flute that Krishna has. The next verse also talks about his playing the flute. So we all know that Krishna has 64 qualities. 60 qualities are possessed by Narayan, but Krishna has 4 more qualities, hence making him Rasaraj, the most complete Supreme Personality of Godhead, because of these extra 4 qualities that he has, which even Narayan doesn't possess. This is given by Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Devotion. So Rupa Goswami says Krishna's speciality is these 4 extra qualities. The first one is Leela Madhuri. He is the performer of wonderful pastimes, varieties of pastimes, especially his childhood pastimes. No other form of the Lord, no other incarnation or form of the Lord has exhibited such sweetness in his pastimes. Like we just had the Damodar Mantma. So we know the sweetness of the childhood pastimes of Krishna. Not only the childhood pastimes, but also the youth pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan are extremely sweet. So that is Leela Madhuri. Only Krishna can possess this. The next one is Bhakta Madhuri or Prema Madhuri. That means he's surrounded by devotees who are endowed with wonderful love of Godhead, like the gopis. The gopis, they had a very special relationship with Krishna. Not only the gopis, even the other devotees. they had a unique relationship with Krishna. They had different rasas with Krishna. So the devotees were accompanying Krishna, have some very special qualities and very special relationship with Krishna. Hence, this is another quality of Krishna which no other form of the Lord has. The third one is Venu Madhuri. So Venu means flute. So Krishna, he can attract all living entities all over the universes just by playing his flute. So we just, in the previous classes, we saw an example of how Brahma, he received his knowledge just by the flute. Even Brahma was captivated by this flute. So just by the flute sound of Krishna, all living entities are attracted and they get captivated. And that's how Krishna attracts everyone. And the fourth speciality of Krishna is Rupa Madhuri. That means he has a wonderful, excellent beauty which cannot be rivaled anywhere in creation. So his threefold bending form, holding the flute, makes him look very, very beautiful. He's a 16-year-old youth who's standing cross-legged, holding a flute in a threefold bending form. So this beauty has no competition anywhere. Even in the Vaikunthas, such a beautiful form of the Lord cannot be seen. So hence, these four qualities, which is Leela Madhuri, Prema Madhuri or Bhakta Madhuri, Venu Madhuri and Rupa Madhuri, these four actually stimulate ecstatic love among the devotees of the Lord. These four are extremely special and it is found only in Krishna. And this is the these four qualities actually stimulate that ecstatic love that devotees have for Krishna. And that's why Krishna's love for Krishna is very, very sweet. The relationship between Krishna and his devotees is very, very sweet, owing to these four qualities. So, if you look at this verse that we just read, you can see that two aspects that we among these four qualities of Krishna is actually discussed in this particular verse. The beauty of Krishna, which is Rupa Madhuri, you can see this verse talks about lotus-like eyes and bodily hue. So it talks about two aspects of beauty of Krishna. One is the lotus-like eyes and the other one is the color of Krishna, the Shyama color of Krishna, which is bluish-black. Okay, so that is one quality. The second thing that this verse talks about, it talks about Venu Madhuri. It talks about the quality of Krishna playing the flute. So these two, both Rupa Madhuri and Venu Madhuri are actually encompassed in this particular verse. For Rupa Madhuri, you have the lotus-like eyes of Krishna and the bodily hue of Krishna, or the color of Krishna. And talking about Venu Madhuri, it talks about the flute Krishna holds. So it says, Venum Kvanantam Aravinda Dayala Daksham. Right? So Venum Kvanantam is expert at playing the flute. So just let's look at each of these aspects. Okay, so not only in this verse 13, but in the next verse also, the flute of Krishna is mentioned. So the flute of Krishna has a very, very special position. In verse number 30, which we just read, the flute of Krishna is known as Venu. In verse number 31, it's called as Vamshi. If you just scroll through verse number 31, we have not yet gone there, but still just to give you an idea. In verse number 31, Krishna's flute is called as Vamshi. In verse number 30, it is called as Venu. So, Krishna has different kinds of flutes. I think we must have heard this last year by Rishabhanu Prabhu when he gave the class. He's talking about different flutes of Krishna. So, this will be a little repetition. But for our own purification, I'll say it again. So there are three kinds, basically there are three kinds of flutes used by Krishna. It's not just three, three major divisions you can say. Three major types of flutes that Krishna has. One is called as Venu, one is called Murali, and the third one is called Vamsi. So we just saw in verse 30 and 31, Venu and Vamsi are mentioned. The other kind of flute is called as Murali. So there are three basic kinds of flutes. Now what is the difference? Venu is a very small flute. It's not more than 6 inches long and it has 6 holes. Okay, other than the holes, the single hole that is used for blowing, It has 6 holes where you can keep your finger, and hence by moving the finger, the air that flows in produces music. Okay, so that is called a veno. Now, Murali is about 18 inches long. It has 1 hole at the end and 4 holes on the body of the flute. That is for making the music. You have 4 holes and for making the music, and 1 hole, obviously, to blow. So this kind of a flute produces a very enchanting sound. So Murali is 18 inches long. And then Vamsi. Vamsi flute is about 15 inches long with 9 holes on the body and 1 hole for blowing. So the first one has 6 holes. The second one is very long, but it has only 4 holes. And the third one, that is holes for blowing, holes for making the music. And Vamsi flute is 15 inches long. It has 9 holes on the body for making the music. So these are the 3 different kinds of flutes that Krishna uses. Now, Krishna used to play on these flutes occasionally when they were needed. And Krishna has a longer Vamsi. Other than this Vamsi that we just saw, which is 15 inches long, Krishna has another long Vamsi, which is called as Mahananda or Sammohini. So when this Vamsi becomes even more longer, it is called as Akarshini. When it is even more longer, it is called Anandini. So initially this Vamsi flute is about 15 inches long. So the same Vamsi flute, when it is extended, it becomes a little more longer. It is called as Mahananda or Sammohini. When it is still longer, it is called as Akarshini. And when it becomes even more longer, it is called as Anandini. The Anandini flute is very pleasing to the cowherd boys. And the cowherd boys call this Anandini flute as Vamshuli. Vamshuli is another name for the Anandini flute. So these flutes are sometimes bedecked with jewels. Sometimes they are made of marble. Sometimes they are made with hollow bamboo. So when a flute is made of jewels, it's called as Sammohini. When it is made of gold, it is called Akarshini. So the same flute, when it is made of jewels, it is called Sammohini. And when it's made of gold, it's called as Akarshini. So it is said that Krishna plays different kinds of tunes on these flutes. So what are those different tunes that Krishna plays, and whom he attracts with these different musical tunes that he plays on the flutes? So that is another discussion. So the demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva's meditation is broken, and they forget everything in astonishment, and Lord Anantadev sways his head like in hypnosis when he hears the first tune of Krishna that he plays. Okay? The second tune that Krishna makes, he plays, makes Yamuna flow backwards. When Yamuna is flowing nicely in a particular fashion, then she hears Krishna's second note, that is the second tune that Krishna plays, she starts flowing backwards. The first tune is to attract the attention of all the demigods. The second tune makes Yamuna flow backwards. The third tune makes the moon stop moving. So Krishna has the power to stop the moon from moving. The fourth tune makes the cows to run to Krishna, and they get stunned listening to Krishna's flute. The fifth note attracts the gopis and makes them come running to him. So this is a very famous, I think it's there in the Bhagavatam also, if I'm not wrong. It talks about the fifth note of Krishna's flute. It makes the gopis come running to him. The sixth tune makes the stone melt and creates autumn season. Seventh note manifests in all seasons. That is, it manifests all seasons simultaneously. That is the seventh note of Krishna. And the eighth note is meant exclusively for Srimati Radharani. And it takes her name and calls for her. And she comes running to him, putting her cloth backwards because she's in such a hurry that she wants to come running to Krishna. When Krishna plays the eighth note, Srimati Radharani alone is captivated, and she's in such a hurry to run to Krishna. She just dresses up in all wrong way, and her mascara is all over her face, and she's in a hurry, and she comes running to Krishna. So these are about the different notes of Krishna's flute, the 8 different tunes that Krishna plays for specific people. So each person is attracted to that particular note. So Krishna has a flute by the name Mahananda, which is like a fish hook that captures the fish of Srimati Radharani's heart and mind. Another flute, which has six holes, is called as Madhana Jamkriti. So Krishna's flute named Sarala makes a low soft tone like the sound of softly singing cuckoo. Krishna is very fond of playing this flute in the ragas Gaudi and Garjan. These are the favorite ragas of Krishna. And not only the three basic flutes that we saw, he also has these flutes, like it is mentioned here. For example, the name Sarala is mentioned. This Sarala flute makes a very, very low soft tone, and it's like the singing of a cuckoo. And Krishna loves to play this flute also. And his favorite ragas are Gaudi and Garjari. So this is from Gaur Ganodesh Deepika, text 122-123. So these are the different kinds of flutes that Krishna has and the different kinds of tunes that is meant for different sets of devotees that Krishna uses. So in Madhya Leela, Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is mentioned, the vibration of this flute is just like a bird that creates a nest within the ears of the gopis and always remains prominent there, not allowing any other sound to enter their ears. Indeed, the gopis cannot hear anything else, nor are they able to concentrate on anything else, not even give a suitable reply. Such are the effects of the vibrations of Krishna's flute. So this is from Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela, how the gopis are so enchanted by the flute of Krishna. It creates a nest in their ears and they are not able to hear anything else once they hear the flute of Krishna. When he plays on the flute, everybody trembles. Demigods are stunned. Non-living objects melt. Cows become like still painted pictures. Waters of the Yamuna become stunned. She stands there. She is waiting to catch some dust of Krishna. Sometimes Krishna takes the cows to the hills, and when there is no water during the summer season, Krishna plays on the flute and a part of the hill melts. A part of the hill melts and the cow drinks the melted hill. See, by our acharyas, they have had these realizations. So they say, sometimes Krishna, when he takes the cows to the hills and there's no water, he starts playing the flute and a part of the hill melts and the cows drink that melted hill. Krishna calls out to everyone with his flute and only the person whom he's calling out hears it and gets the message of Krishna. So it's very specific, whatever his tune is, it's specific to those people. Krishna calls the cows by name with his flute. So even the name of the cow is conveyed through the flute that he plays. Krishna plays the flute and Brahma is hearing it and he reproduces it as the Kama Gayatri. So that is the power of the flute. He's just playing the tune. Krishna is playing the tune on his flute. We saw in the previous verses in the first part of the Brahma Samhita that by hearing this tune, Brahma received the tune and what did he do? The Kama Gayatri came out of his mouth. So he reproduced the tune as the Kama Gayatri. Sometimes the rock melts and leaves footprints. A number of rocks have the footprints of Krishna in Vrindavan. Those who have been to Vrindavan would have surely witnessed this in Govardhan. And also in Radha Damodar Mandir, they have a rock that has the impression of Krishna's feet. Actually, this stone was, the Shila rather, was worshipped by Srila Sanatan Goswami and later it is in the Radha Damodar temple now. And in Govardhan area, we can see many of such little shilas where Krishna has stepped on the stone and the stone has melted and hence Krishna's impression is seen on the stone. So sometimes the rock melts and his footprint becomes imprinted there. Yamuna can become still, she can flow backwards and the cowherd boys, so that, when the Yamuna becomes still, then Krishna wants the cowherd boys to cross the Yamuna when they are playing, if they want to go to the other side of the bank, that time Krishna just plays the flute and Yamuna becomes still. She doesn't flow, she just becomes still depending on Krishna's requirement. Sometimes she flows backwards, sometimes she is stunned, but when Krishna desires, she can even remain still. And what is the use of her becoming still? The cowherd boys can just cross over her like they are working on land. So they just cross over and they go to the other side. And not only that, sometimes Krishna, he transforms this flute he's playing into a boat, our acharyas write, that this flute itself becomes a boat and with the gopis, he ferries across the Yamuna. So these are the different glories of Krishna's flute. The Gopis, is they are hankering to kiss the lips of Krishna. But the float is always on the lips of Krishna, and hence they get very jealous of this float. So, and they blame the float. They say, this float is utterly unfit because it is merely a dead bamboo stick. What is this float? It's just a dead piece of bamboo stick. And moreover, floats, they belong to the male category. They are not female. They are male, right? So the Gopis are very, very jealous of this flute. What is this flute doing on Krishna's lips? This flute is always drinking the nectar of Krishna's lips. He's a male, and he has no right to sit on Krishna's lips. So like that, they feel very jealous when the flute is always on the lips of Krishna. And the flute, it's like a conversation between the flute and the Gopis. So the Gopis are very angry over the flute, saying that, oh flute, what qualification you have? You're just a dead bamboo stick. You are not even a female. What right you have to be there? And the flute tells them back, okay, women, then come forward and claim your property. So the flute challenges them. You think you're great women and you can take the nectar of Krishna's lips? If you can, you can come forward. But Krishna is always going to keep me on his lips. So like that, there's a competition between the flute and the Gopis. And the flute, the Gopis are saying it's a dead bamboo stick and all that, still the flute is actually living. Anything to do with Krishna is animate, we know that. So the flute is also a living personality. And this flute of Krishna in the spiritual world, he incarnated as Vamshivadan Thakur. And he was a personal associate of Sachi Mata when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this world. So the flute of Krishna incarnated as Vamshivadana Thakur, and he served Sachi Mata and Vishnupriya Devi. He served them very beautifully. So this flute always tastes the nectar of Krishna's lips, and he laughs at the gopis, saying, you think you're also expert in these loving affairs with Krishna, but I'm something greater, because Krishna never likes to let go of me. Yes, sometimes the gopis even snatch away the flute and try to hide it, but Krishna never, he runs behind the gopis to claim his flute. So he's very attached to his flute. So that's the beauty of the flute. So flute is an essential part of Krishna's beauty and pastime, and that is one of the greatest quality of Krishna with which he attracts the entire world. Okay, so there are some quotes which I had picked up from Bhagavatam and from other Goswami's books about the flute. Sometimes we may think, why are we giving so much importance just to a flute? But still, anything associated with Krishna is very special. He's a person and he's got a great importance. So it is important for us to also meditate on the paraphernalia of Krishna. It has great importance. Now, in the 10th canto, 35th chapter, verse 15, Srimad Bhagavatam, the gopis tell Mother Yashoda, the elder gopis, they are telling Mother Yashoda, when your son plays on his flute, Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma and Indra, although they are supposed to be the greatest learned scholars and personalities, they all become bewildered. Although they are all very great personalities, by hearing the sound of Krishna's flute, they humbly bow down and become great from studying the sound of that, from the sound vibrated nectar of devotion. In this book, Vidakta Madhava, Rupa Goswami describes the vibration of Krishna's flute. The sound vibration created by the flute of Krishna wonderfully stopped Lord Shiva from playing his Dindima drum. So Lord Shiva plays a Dindima drum, he plays a drum. When Lord Shiva hears the flute of Krishna, he stops playing his drum. And the same flute has caused great sages like the four Kumaras to become disturbed in their meditation. It has caused Lord Brahma, who was sitting on the lotus flower, for the creative function to become astonished. And Anantadeva, who was calmly holding the planets on his hooves, was moving in this way and due to the transcendental vibration from Krishna's flute. He was shaking his head, which penetrated through the covering of the universe and reached the spiritual sky. This is also from Nectar of Devotion. Actually, throughout Bhagavatam, not throughout Bhagavatam, throughout chapters 29 to 31 chapters of 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the flute's activities are described in many verses. And these verses show how the flute is an integral part of Krishna's leelas, especially with the gopis. So there is a lot about the flute mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, especially when the Rasa Leela is spoken of in these chapters, in these five chapters. That's where you will find a lot. That's where you will find a lot of reference on Krishna's flute. So hearing the song of Krishna's flute, the peacocks dance, and all other creatures, they become stunned when they see them. The ears of the cows stand up on their end as they drink the nectar of Krishna's flute song. Their calves simply stand stunned. The milk they have been drinking from their mother's udder still in their mouth. So they don't even swallow the milk. They are just drinking the milk from their, the calves are drinking milk from their mother. They are not even swallowing it. They are so stunned. They are just looking at Krishna without swallowing the milk. So this is from Srimad Bhagavatam. The birds take shelter of the branches of the trees and close their eyes, listening to the song of Krishna's flute with rapt attention. The birds don't even open their eyes. They are like closing their eyes and listening to the beautiful song of Krishna. Actually, there's only references for the glories of Krishna's flute. There's just a few. So we'll move on to the next part of the description, which is Krishna's lotus eyes. So this is the next part of meditation that happens in this verse. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in the purport, he says that Krishna's lotus eyes is not only beautiful, but it is also the cause of others' vision. Not only spiritual vision, material vision, everything. Our vision itself comes from Krishna's eyes. Even the spiritual vision, if we have any kind of spiritual vision, it is only by the mercy of Krishna's eyes. So it is a source of everything. The same thing is actually whatever Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is saying in the purport is also confirmed in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, that the ability to see is coming from the Lord's lotus eyes. Lord is known as Pundariksha, or he's also known as Aravindaksha, Pundarikaksha, right? And he's also known as Aravindaksha. That means eyes, which is like lotus petals. Pundrika means lotus, and Aravinda also means lotus. So the Lord has Pundarikakshini, they call him. They also call him as Aravindaksha. So the lotus petals is used to describe the eyes of the Lord. In Krishna Karnamrita, his eyes are described that Sri Krishna's eyes are long like petals of blooming lotus. His they are restless. They're very, very restless. They are wide open eyes, full of joy, and being fully aware of the heart of the beautiful young girls of Raja, he fills them with fluttering confusions of love. He fills his eyes with fluttering confusions of love. His broad eyes are very broad, and they are very reddish, like the rising sun, and there is a lot of compassion in his eyes. So these are some descriptions of the beautiful eyes of Krishna. In Krishna Karanamrita by Bilva Mangala Thakur. So these are some aspects of Krishna's eyes. They're first of all like lotus petals, very beautiful, very wide. They're very restless. They're full of joy. They're also full of compassion. They're broad. They're reddish. And they're very restless. With the fluttering confusions of love, to attract the gopis. So this is how Krishna's eyes look like. So that's about Krishna's lotus eyes. Now Krishna's color is also described in this verse as Shyama. So Krishna's bodily hue is bluish black monsoon rain cloud. That is the first comparison that we can think of. Whenever we think of the color of Krishna, we automatically think of the rain cloud, the heavy rain cloud that is just about to shower. Full of, that is really, really heavy, and it's just about to bring rain, that kind of a color of the rain cloud, which is bluish black, monsoon rain cloud. It is also compared to a tamal tree, bluish black. The Indra Neela Mani is a gemstone, which is again bluish black, and a blue lotus. These are different comparisons in this material world with which we can relate to the color of Krishna. Krishna's color is transcendental, but still we need some comparison what we can perceive in this material world, right? So for that, there are different comparisons given in Shastra to understand Krishna's color. And as I already mentioned, the monsoon rain cloud, tamal tree, Indra Neela Mani jewel, blue lotus, and also the Atasi flower. you should check out the color of the Akasi flower. It's actually bluish black. You can Google it and look at the color of the flower. So all these explanations are given in Shastra to understand the color of Krishna. So when Srimati Radharani, she sees the clouds, the thick monsoon clouds, she develops ecstatic symptoms and sometimes she faints because she's so reminded of Krishna. Similarly, the gopis, they go and they embrace the tamal tree when they feel separation from Krishna because all this is reminding them of Krishna. Even the blue lotus flower, it reminds everybody of Krishna. Neelopalatala, if you see another Shastric verse that talks about the color of Krishna, it's actually a blue lotus. It's referred as Neelopalatala. That is also the color of Krishna. So all these different things that are found in this material world will help us understand the bluish-black color of Krishna. Now one may ask, why should Krishna choose to be this color? Like too black, you know, dark complexion, blackish color. In fact, I'm reminded of you know, the songs of the Alvars. When they talk about Krishna's color, they say that he's so black, so dark, that when he was tied to the motor by Mother Yashoda, and when he was weeping, the kajal was actually coming out of his eyes, and it was mixing on his cheeks. The kajal was mixing with the tears, and it was all over his cheeks. So at that time, there was a competition between Krishna's blackness and the blackness of the kajal. Both was mixing, and you could not differentiate between the two. So like that, he's very, very black, very dark boy. So one may think, why should he be so dark, a black boy? You know, and there are so many things, these Alvars descriptions. They talk about, they often ask this question, so did Yamuna become so black because Krishna was taking bath in the Yamuna regularly? Or because of Yamuna's blackness, Krishna became so black, like that. So he's considered to be a very dark complexion guy. So anyway, so Krishna, the reason behind Krishna's having this bluish-black complexion, there is a very beautiful explanation given in Bhakti Ratna Prakasha. It's a work by Raghava Goswami. Raghava Goswami is one of the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If you read Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, you can get more details about this personality, a very close personality of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wrote the work called as Bhakti Ratna Prakasha. So there he gives the explanation, because apparently even in those days many people have asked this question, why does Krishna, which is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, choose this kind of a color? Because everything is his will, he can do what he wants. Why didn't he take up a fair complexion? So why did he do this? So at this point, this is what he writes in his book. At this point, someone may ask, what is that form? Why is it that the form of the personality of Godhead, which he manifests by his own wish and which is made of the sweetness of transcendental pastimes, is very famous everywhere for its dark complexion? Krishna has no...
Ma, go open the water tap.
So Krishna is known as Shyam Sundar. He's very... dark. He's famous as being dark. So why is this? So why is he so famous for his dark complexion? A part of the answer to this question may be found in the statement of the Shruti Shastra. No one can understand even a drop of the Lord's transcendental form. Aside from that, it is also said he eternally manifests the color of Shyama, within which all colors rest. His complexion is not the material color black. So one should not think that his complexion is material color black. It is actually sarvavarno. That means it is the color shyama is a very special color. It is a composite of all the colors in the world. So if we combine all the colors that we have known, you will get a color that is somewhat blackish. Okay, but it's not fully black. You combine all the colors you know of this world, to combine everything in a palette, you will get one particular color that is somewhat blackish. So why? Because Krishna is everything. So even his color is a composite color of everything. So the color of the personality of Godhead Krishna is described here as Neelopalatala. That means it is like that of a lotus flower with petals tinted blue and white. So that is the color you should come to and you mix up all the colors. So people always ask, why is Krishna blue? The color of the Lord has not been imagined by an artist. It is described in authoritative scripture. In the Brahma Samhita also, the color of Krishna's body is compared to that of a bluish cloud. So in this verse also, we see the color of Krishna. The color of the Lord is not a poetical imagination. There are authoritative descriptions in the Brahma Samhita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and many Puranas about the Lord's body. So this is about the color of the Lord, the bluish black complexion, which is most attractive. It is a composite of all colors, the most attractive color that anyone can have. Actually, again, I was reminded of one lecture by Guru Maharaj where he was talking about beauty of this world. So he was talking, some people, they are very proud that they are very fair, especially in India, it's a common thing to use Fair and Lovely and all these fairness products because, you know, it's like it's a pride, it's a matter of pride to be fair. And if you come to the West, people are, you know, trying to get tanned. So they are sitting outside in the sun trying to get tanned. So like that, there are, you know, so many things happening. Nobody is satisfied with their color. Everyone thinks that is beautiful. This is more beautiful. Being, you know, wheatish is beautiful for some people. For some people, being very fair, being like the white is very beautiful. For some people, no, I should get dark. So like that, nobody is happy. You know, everybody has a problem with their color. They think the other thing is more beautiful. But Maharaj was explaining that actually the most beautiful is bluish black. Nobody understands that. And no human being can actually achieve that color. Because that is the color of all the associates of Krishna. That is in Vaikuntha, everybody is bluish black. That is considered as the most beautiful. Blue is actually considered the most beautiful. And who has bluish black skin? Nobody. So that's the beauty of Krishna, and that is his color. So that is transcendental, not of this material world. And also, a couple of other things are mentioned in this verse about Krishna's peacock feather in his crown. So Krishna loves to dress up himself with all kinds of feathers and minerals and flowers in the... we'll actually see that in the next verse. But anyhow, Krishna likes to dress up with all this, and this peacock feather is very special to Krishna. And the peacock feather that Krishna wears is known as Navaratna Vidamba. That is the name of the peacock feather that Krishna wears. This is also from Gaurakarna Deepika, I think. So it's called as Navaratna Vidamba, and he wears that always on his crown. So that is the biggest identity of Krishna, the peacock feather. And the other thing that is mentioned here is the Shyamasundar form of the Lord. And this Shyamasundar form of the Lord is so beautiful that even millions and millions of cupids are defeated by his beauty. Hence, he is known as Madan Mohan, or attractor of cupids. So even Cupid is actually supposed to be very handsome and very good looking. Even he is also bewildered by the beauty of Shyamasundar. We have already seen about Rupa Madhuri, so I won't elaborate more on this. So this is about verse number 30. Now we'll go to verse number 31, which is also a very meditative verse on Krishna. And we'll have a discussion once we read the verse translation and purport. Alola Chandra Kala Sattvana Malaya Vamshi Ratnangadam Pranaya Kelikala Vilasam Shyamam Tribangalalitam Niyata Prakasham Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Synonyms: Alola, swinging, Chandraka, with a moon locket, Lasat, beautified, Vanamalaya, a garland of flowers, Vamshi, flute, Ratnangadam, adorned with jeweled ornaments, Pranaya, of love, Kelikala, in past times, Vilasam, who always revels, Shyamam, Shyamasundara, Tribanga, bending in three places, Lalitam, graceful, Niyata, eternally, Prakasham, manifest, Govindam, Govinda, Adi Purusham, the original person, Tam, him, aham, I, Bhajami, worship. Translation: I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, round whose neck is swinging a garland of flowers beautified with the moon locket. and whose hands are adorned with the flute and jeweled ornaments, who always revels in the pastimes of love, whose graceful threefold bending form of Shyamasundara is eternally manifest. So this verse also talks about Shyamasundara. It talks about the flute. So we'll see the purport and then discussion. Purport. In the shloka beginning with Chintamani Prakara, which is verse number 29, which we have already seen in the previous class, two classes ago, when we had our class 2 weeks back, that time we saw the Chintamani Prakara, Sadmashukalpa Vriksha, that verse. So in that shloka beginning with Chintamani Prakara, the transcendental region of and the spiritual names of Govinda in the was mentioned. Okay. So in the shloka beginning with Chintamani Prakara, the transcendental region and the spiritual names of Govinda were seen. In the shloka beginning with Venam Kwanantam that we just discussed, the eternal beautiful form of Govinda is seen. And in the shloka that we just read, verse number 31, the amorous pastimes of Govinda, the embodiment of the 64 excellences have been described. All the spiritual affairs that come within the scope of description in the narration of the ecstatic mellow quality rasa are included in the spiritual amorous sports of Govinda. So this particular verse talks about the leela of Govinda. It talks about the spiritual affairs because it says the one who revels in the pastimes of love. And he has a three graceful, threefold bending form, Shyamasundara. So it talks about the past tense of love. So these are all meditative verses, and verse number 31 talks about the Leela. This verse is a description of the past tense of the Lord, his unique past tense, specifically his dance with the gopis. Krishna himself, when he talks about his past tense, he says, whenever I think of the Rasa Leela, I become very eager to have it again and again. So as far as Krishna is concerned, his favorite pastime is the Rasa Leela pastime. So these pastimes with the gopis are considered as the topmost. And the verse describes that Krishna's neck is swinging with flower garlands and ornaments. And the flower garland that Krishna wears is called as Vaijayanti, Vaijayanti Mala. That is the name of the garland that Krishna wears. So Krishna, he likes dressing up. Krishna is very fond of dressing up. And he dresses like a dramatic actor to attract all the gopis. So why does he dress up? It's just to attract these gopis. So that's the reason why he's dressing up. So he wears helmets, earrings, necklaces, bangles, rings, ankle belts. He uses his flute. All those are used for dressing up. And the vanamali, the garland he wears, he uses flowers to make these garlands and the other decorations. Krishna likes to dress up wherever he goes. So he uses all kinds of jewelry. He uses all kinds of flowers. He uses the minerals in the Vrindavan forest. Like that, he dresses up very, very beautifully wherever he goes. In fact, it is so interesting that Krishna, he decorated so well when he went to the Battle of Kurukshetra. In the Battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna was wearing the garland. Actually, he was wearing the Vanamala when he was in Kurukshetra. Why would he do that in the battlefield? It was because he wanted to attract all the devotees on the battlefield, and he graced them by wearing the Vanamala. So just by dressing up, Krishna can attract the hearts of everybody. And everybody is blessed when they see this beautiful form of the Lord, which is so nicely decorated. That's why the pujaris, they take so much effort and time to decorate the deity so nicely. Krishna loves flowers. So you see, a lot of them, they spend time on these garlands. They spend so much money on flowers because Krishna must be very well decorated. I mean, Krishna is very well decorated. He's very satisfied and the devotees are blessed. Krishna graces the devotees when he's decorated well. So Krishna loves to be adorned with flower jewelry. That is something unique. Because again, when you see in the temples, you will see that when they are dressing up Krishna, they like to dress him up with anklets made with flowers and with manjaris, tulasi manjaris. Krishna's anklets and his bracelets, he decorates himself like that. Of course, he also loves to wear pearl necklaces and rings and bracelets. But Krishna loves to decorate himself with these flowers. And Radha Krishna Ganodesh Deepika, it gives a description of how different jewelry is made from flowers and leaves, like crowns on the hair, ornaments like necklaces. They are made with different kinds of berries and flowers and flowering buds, bracelets, anklets, everything. Everything, each and every jewelry that the Lord wears is made out of flowers also. Other than wearing pearl necklaces and gold and everything, Krishna also likes to wear flower decorations. So that is his favorite, made out of forest flowers and tulsi manjaris. And in fact, the pujaris in the temple, they are trained well to make flower ornaments, especially in India. And making flower ornaments is one of the 64 arts and crafts that is used in the devotion to Krishna. And Lalita Devi, who is the Sati, she is an expert in making these ornaments. So, of course, Krishna doesn't require ornaments to make him beautiful. He likes to wear ornaments, but the fact is that the ornaments and all these jewelry, that is not making Krishna beautiful, because Krishna is making these ornaments beautiful. Because Krishna is so complete, he is making everything more beautiful. So he is Bhushana Bhushanangam. The ornaments are not making him beautiful. The flower decorations are not making him beautiful. He is making them look beautiful. That's how we see it. In fact, when we take darshan of the deities during Saina Arati, of course in Atlanta temple we don't have Saina Arati, but if you take darshan during Mangal Arati also, you will see Krishna is there with minimum decorations, minimum jewelry, minimum gopi dots. In fact, no gopi dots also. So at that time, he looks most beautiful. The real beauty of Krishna can be seen at that time. So, but of course, Krishna likes to be dressed up. And as an act of devotion, we also like to dress up Krishna. So the perfection of the jewelry is seen when it decorates the body of Krishna. Now, how much of our amount of jewelry we may buy or we may use on our bodies or on our beloved's bodies, it's not going to be so beautiful. But when the jewelry, it adorns the body of the Lord, it adorns the deity of the Lord, that's when it reaches its perfection, perfection of beauty. That jewelry reaches its perfection. And this verse also talks about the moon locket, Chandra Kanti, the moon locket. Krishna has a moon locket. This, it's a precious stone. It is called as Chandra Kanti in Sanskrit. So the nectar of devotion also tells that Krishna, not only Krishna, but even Vishnu, he wears this moon locket in the same manner as Krishna wears it. And this Chandrakanti or moonstone is actually a fabulous gem, and it is formed by the congealed rays of the moon. This is how traditionally they say the jewel was formed. By congealing the rays of the moon, this jewel was formed. And of course, it emits in different directions, like our jewels, right? They emit light in different directions. Similarly, the Chandrakanta jewel also emits light in different directions. And Krishna likes to wear it. And then the other point that is mentioned here is the Shyama Sundara Rupa. This is the 16-year-old blackish blue youth standing cross-legged with a flute in his hand. And this Shyama Sundara Rupa is the original form of the Supreme Lord. All other forms of the Lord come from the Shyama Sundara Rupa. So this 16-year-old youth standing cross-legged, holding the flute, bluish-black body, is the original form of the Lord. And the rest of the other forms that we see are actually expansions of this form. And this is further, further about the Shyama Sundara Rupa is discussed in verse 5.38, and we'll hear more about it at that time. And more than anything, this verse talks about the point that Krishna revels in the pastimes of love. Of course, the love of the gopis is the highest, and there are so many stories that talk about the pastimes of Krishna and the gopis, and in the future verses also we will be talking about this. So I'll stop here. If you have anything to add, because I know there is so much you can ask to these meditative verses, and if there are any corrections or questions, please go ahead. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Hey, Mark, I want to get some of my yoga first. Okay, we don't have someone. Okay. Why me, Prabhu?
What you say is also nectar, Prabhu, so I want to hear that as well.
Maybe by your, I don't know, you were in the picture of others, glorifying others, you get the feeling like, are we really great or like that? Even though we are not.
So,
this is so amazing.
Initially, I thought you were going to cover only two verses, right? I was thinking, what would Mataji would talk for like 1 hour, just two verses, and also everything is straightforward. What would she add? I was thinking like this, Mataji. I mean, no offense, but I was thinking like that. Man, after hearing all these things, right, Mataji, so nice, Mataji. I really enjoy it. On my desktop, Mataji, on my old laptop, I used to have one picture of Krishna. Like, exactly, I mean, at least it's, the artist really made it very well, Mataji. Whatever we have discussed today, I'll share that with Mataji on our group.
Mm-hmm.
It's so
yeah.
Nice, I really like it, Mataji.
Yes.
Yeah, first thing, Mataji, the way you were reciting Mataji's voice, I remember Ms. Subhalakshmi Mataji when she sang Venkatesha Suprabhatam, the tune. Initially, I thought, like, why would ISKCON adopt this one? Then I heard my Guru Maharaj also, Mataji. Everybody is singing in the same tune, which Venkatesha Suprabhatam was sung, the same tune. And that's so nice, Mataji. Then, a long time back, I asked a question you and Bhaktivinoda Prabhu about why what's the color of Krishna. At that time, mm-hmm. you spent a lot of time educating me on that one, Mataji. And today, mm-hmm. I got a different question. Okay, everything is fine. Why blackish color? But eventually, you answered everything, Mataji. And it's a composite of all colors. And but I have one question, Mataji. Even before that, I have one, because of my dumb attitude, Mataji, I was thinking, why is, as you mentioned also, right, Mataji, why is Krishna so specific about flute? It's just a wood. You can get anywhere, you can make some holes and just blow it. What's so special about that? But after hearing today's class, I understood, Mataji, how, why he's giving so much importance for that one. You can attract different kinds of people with different tunes. And Mataji, still I have a question. Like you said, there is one personification for the flute, right? Why is even that particular devotee given so much importance? Do we have any links for that one, Mataji?
Why the flute is given so much importance?
Yeah, because the flute, obviously, it's a personification, right, Mataji? Some person is different in that one. You said somebody, Vallabha, I forgot the name, Mataji.
Yeah,
why is the devotee given so much importance? Even it seems like it's more, even more than Radharani, right?
So actually, the flute is still in Shantara sound. It's a mix of Shantaras and conjugal. It's a mix. The flute, it's conjugal because it's on the lips of Krishna. But still, it is Shantara. It doesn't have the kind of interaction that the gopis have with Krishna. The loving reciprocation is still not complete like how the gopis have with Krishna. But still, the gopis are jealous because it's always on the lips of Krishna. It's a unique position, yeah. But it's a mix of Shantarasa and conjugal rasa, actually. It's not fully conjugal or something like that.
Wow, nice, Mataji. Very nice, Mataji. you know, Mataji, in Mayapuri's, that trope is there, right? In that one, Krish Prabhu, he's expert in playing.
Yeah.
I really love that one, Mataji. There is one, Mayapuri's one, I got a list of tunes, Mataji. Hare Krishna tunes and many things. Mm-hmm. Vishwan Prabhu asked me to share that one. I'm so foolish. I did not do that one, Mataji, yet. In that one, I will share that link also, Mataji. It's on YouTube.
Yes.
Especially, it's sung by Vishwamara Prabhu, this guy, and flute by this guy, Krish. So melodious, Mataji. So nice. It was done in one ashram, Matai. Ashram. It's so nice. I will share that one and this picture also.
Yes,
sir. Yeah. That's all, Matai. I'm so excited. It's so nice, Matai. Thank you so much, Matai, for spending time and picking up all these details. Thank you, Matai. Hari Bol.
Thank you, Prabhu. Prabhu, and also Bhaktivinoda Prabhu, I think you had shared once on Facebook also about the color of Krishna. Can you elaborate on what you had shared here also, Prabhu, for everyone to hear?
Oh, for the color of Krishna, Mataji? Color of Krishna?
Yes.
Yes, Mataji. I shared something last month, I think. One thing was, we often see statements in Upanishads that Krishna is infinite. But it's more an abstract concept. But whenever we see sky, it is infinite. The ether space is infinite. But the color is bluish. So because Krishna is infinite, he is bluish. That is one explanation.
Very good. Very good.
I think that's the only thing I remember.
Oh, okay.
There was somewhere also.
You have it with you, Prabhu?
I have to search, Mataji. I'm with phone.
Okay.
I have to go and search. But this one thing was prominent because he's infinite and sky is also infinite. So it is blue. So Krishna is blue.
Wow. That's so nice. Okay. This was my own mental concoction before. Of course, it doesn't have any Shastric reference or something. I used to think like this before we came across all these Acharya's explanations. I used to think, Vishnu means all-pervading. So the sky is also all-pervading. So Vishnu is blue and the sky is blue. That's what I used to think. Of course, it was just the imagination that I was having in my mind. But then later when you hear all this, it's very similar, right?
Actually, even in the scientific explanation also, they explain that, Mataji. Using wavelength theory, they say that blue, ultimately everything together will be blue. So like what you are mentioning, mixing all colors. So how our rishis knew that long back.
So nice.
Yeah, wonderful class, Mataji, especially you are talking about flute. So much to learn about flute itself. Krishna's flute. That's so nice.
Very well, yeah. All glories to all the Maharajas.
It was as if reading some commentary, Mataji. I didn't feel like I'm sitting in a lecture. I felt like, okay, I'm reading some purport of a Prabhupada or some of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur or something. It was so, so amazing.
Yeah, actually, I did just copy-paste Prabhu, that's true, from all of that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you spoke exactly what was, that is the beauty.
Yeah.
And you were also mentioning about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, saying how Krishna's eyes is the source of vision. No, is that what he said? That
yes,
source of vision. So it just reminded me of Billomangala Thakur. Even after he plucked his eyes, still he could see Krishna. He could see Krishna. That was amazing.
Right. Even the story of Kuratayya. When his eyes was taken out by that Krimikanta Cholan, at that time Ramanuja tells him that you should go and pray to Lord Varada to give your eyes. So when he goes in front of Varada, he prays actually to give eyes, spiritual vision, with which he can see only the Supreme Lord, that is Lord Varada himself, and Ramanuja. So he gets that eyes in with which he can see this deity form, and he can also see only his Acharya, who is Ramanuja. But when Ramanuja Acharya comes back and he checks on him and asks him, so did you pray to the Lord to get vision? And Kuratalvan, he says, yes, I did pray and I got my vision. I got what I desired. So then Ramanuja Acharya tries to test him by asking him, so tell me, describe to me the deity, the form of the deity if you have the eyes. And because he had received the boon to see Lord Varada in front of him all the time, he described from his feet to the crown how Varada was dressed that day, how the form of the deity was dressed that day. And Ramanujacharya was very blown away, because Ramanujacharya knew that his external eyes were still not able to see, but still he is able to describe the form of the Lord. Then Ramanujacharya said, okay, this could be the trick of the Lord, because the Lord has blessed you, you're able to see the Lord. Now describe me, he says. And then because he's also got the boon to describe to see Ramanujacharya eternally, he's able to see Ramanujacharya and describe him. So he sings verses glorifying the beauty of Ramanujacharya also. And then Ramanujacharya is like, okay, what's this?
Wow.
Interestingly, Matai, whenever some people, they do meditation, they always close their eyes. They don't use their material eyes. They always close. Yeah. Then only they can see.
Correct, Prabhu. Correct. So the source of all vision is Krishna.
And the Radhanath Maharaj example of fair and then tan, that's also very nice. Never thought of it, actually. Amazing.
Yeah, I was so excited. I never thought he was going to go with that. Okay, actually, real beauty is blue and black.
I've heard in a couple of lectures very similar statements, but it's with respect to some different aspects. In New Zealand, people used to have a picture of Fiji. It's close to New Zealand. In the office cubicles, it seems. So they want to escape from the city and go to a very paradise island.
Mm-hmm.
And in Fiji, they have a picture of skyscrapers inside their homes of New Zealand. No one is happy in this world. That is one thing I heard. And pretty similar somewhere. Yeah. That's one thing. Very similar.
That's nice. Prabhu, actually I got your post, Prabhu, your Facebook post. I'll read out your Facebook post. Question, why is Krishna always depicted as a bluish in color? Answer, because he was like that. He was bluish in color. He was blue-blackish in color. His color is similar to the monsoon cloud, dark monsoon cloud. Shyam is the Sanskrit word. You hear this word Radheshyam. Shyam means blackish. Also, the word Krishna means attractive, beautiful. It also means black. The word Krishna also means black. It comes from the root Krish, which means to attract or to pull. It is amazing that black color is that which pulls all that. That means in Sanskrit, they knew it already. They knew it already. That's why. The word Krishna also means black, because it absorbs the maximum light or waves. That which pulls or attracts. But what it signifies is the color means infinite. Just like the sky, it has a bluish color, but actually it has no color. Sky is unlimited. That is the significance of this color. He may look to you as a limited person, but he is unlimited. Everything about the way he is depicted has significance. There is a lot of symbolism involved. So this was the post that he took from.
Hello.
Very beautiful.
Thank you. But I think it was from Guru Maharaj lecture.
Oh, Jai. Very nice. Thanks. Very, very good.
Wow. Thanks for reading it out.
Yeah. So nice. I was looking for this. Luckily, I found it now. I was doing a search on your profile.
Oh, okay.
Oh. Thanks, Prabhu.
Thank you.
Haribol Mataji. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for the wonderful class, Mataji.
Thank you.
Actually,
so much.
I used to always feel very jealous about the flowers, Mataji. More than flowers, the flute is, because I feel like that flower, right? That whole life, it's completely surrendered to Krishna when it is in his body, and when it dies, also like it gets the salvation, right?
Yeah.
But not the every flower will get that opportunity. But now I feel so much jealous on this flute, Mataji. That is flower. Thank you so much, Mataji. I didn't know there's different types of flutes, actually. It's really nice to know, Mataji. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Revati, for in spite of so much work and hectic schedule, logging in and relishing everything. Thank you. And also this realization about the flower was very nice. You said, you know, it stays only for a few hours, right? Like, and it lives and dies in the body of the Lord. So
yeah.
Nice, so nice, so beautiful. Such a nice realization.
Thank you, Mataji. Thank you so much for your time, Mataji.
Thank you, Revati. Hare Krishna.
Hare Bol.
Okay, so I think that's all right. So we'll end the call.
Yes, Mother. I think. Yes, Mother. Sure.
Okay. Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you, Mataji.
Thank you, Mataji. ప్రశయ కృపా సింధుపై వచ్చ పదితానం పావనిపియో వైష్ణవేపియో నమో నమః అనంతకోటి వైష్ణవులకి జై నామాచార్య శిలా స్థాపనకి జై
శ్రీ బ్రహ్మ సంహితకి జై ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు ది అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్
హరే కృష్ణ
హరే కృష్ణ
జై
హరి
హరి బోల్ థ్యాంక్ యూ
థ్యాంక్ యూ